It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Libby Dangman in for Larry Mantle today. Coming up next hour, we're going to look at some of the major Supreme Court rulings that are still expected this term, including the question of whether to add an immigration question to the census, a question about citizenship status that could suppress answers to the census and really affect Southern California's power in Congress and federal aid that comes into our region. Also, Facebook moderators, the really intense living conditions, the way that they are forced to look at horrible content all day long and how that system can be improved for workers. That's all coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. In the meantime, it is the monkey on the back of so many Americans, student loan debt. The total burden on the 45 million Americans with student loan debt adds up to about $1.6 trillion. 2020 Democratic candidates are trying to one-up each other with plans to help people pay for college. Some candidates want to forgive student loans. A few say they'd forgive student loans and make college more affordable, so hit two birds with one stone. Bernie Sanders kicked off the week with his proposal, a bill called the College for All Act. Befitting Sanders' role as a liberal rabble-rouser who pushes the party to the left, it's probably the most ambitious of all the candidates' plans. But we want to dive into the details, compare and contrast some of the plans that are on the table with our first guest, Stephen Johnson, a staff reporter at the Chronicle for Higher Education. And he tweets at STETYJohn if you want to follow him on social media. Hi, Stephen. Thanks for coming on Air Talk today.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So Bernie Sanders releases his big plan ahead of the Democratic debates this week. Elizabeth Warren, another candidate who has come out with a major proposal. What plans are we seeing generally on the table from 2020 candidates? Are those kind of the two biggest proposals so far?
Yeah, those are definitely the most aggressive. And both Sanders and Warren have tried to place themselves a little bit further on the left. In this debate, basically just about every mainstream candidate on the Democratic side has looked at proposals for college affordability. 9 in 10 Americans say that that's a really big problem to them, and they want candidates to address it. So really most mainstream candidates at this point have furthered some kind of proposal for debt or tuition-free college. Sanders and Warren and Julian Castro, the former housing secretary, they have all gone a bit more aggressive and proposed eliminating either parts of or all of the student debt load in the country.
Stephen Johnson with the Chronicle of Higher Education, segueing me perfectly when you say 9 out of 10 folks say that that's a big problem for them. I want to take calls from folks who have had student loans, and I want to hear how they've affected your life. I know on our staff in the meeting yesterday after the show discussing the issue of student loans, I heard from producers who say they have made major life decisions because of the burden of student loan debt and needing to, say, forgo big vacations, take certain jobs, do certain things in their life because they have this debt looming over them. 866-893-5722 is the number to call to share your story about student loan debt. Again, 866-893-5722 to call into Air Talk. Let me know how student loans have affected your life. So, Stephen, what's the elevator pitch for what Bernie's proposing?
Basically, he's saying this framework hasn't worked. We've sold you a false bill of goods. And now that we have so many people in college and have brought them in under this faulty scheme, the best thing we can do at this point is just cancel all $1.6 trillion of that debt. That means just writing off the debt that the government holds, and the government holds most of that debt, and then paying off for the 5% or so that are private loans. That's obviously really expensive, but he argues that it could bring around a $1 trillion stimulus to the greater economy that has effects on homeownership, on buying cars, on consumer spending, on GDP. All these things have been depressed, according to economists, because of the student debt load.
And how does that compare to what Elizabeth Warren is proposing? She doesn't go quite as far with debt forgiveness, correctly, and she has a different model for paying for it.
Sure, and hers was still quite ambitious when she proposed it. I think that's part of the plan that Sanders has in leapfrogging her a bit. She said most debtors would have at least some of their debt canceled under her plan, The limit is up to $50,000 in debt for borrowers with income under $100,000 a year. Those between $100,000 and $250,000 are eligible for some cancellation, not the full $50,000. But both of them would make public colleges tuition-free. Both of them share a lot of planks that other candidates are advancing to.
And when Sanders wants to forgive all private and public debt, $1.5 trillion worth, he's looking to Wall Street, right, to pay for that. What is the model that he's putting forward with his plan to find that kind of money?
Right. He's saying that he would fund his pretty expensive proposal through a tax on Wall Street financial transactions. That would be something in the neighborhood of like 0.1 to 0.5% tax on trading in bonds and stocks and derivatives. Warren has said that she would pay through her plan with what she's talked about a lot, her ultra-millionaire tax. That's a 2% asset tax on the 75,000 wealthiest families in the country.
People who have assets in excess of $50 million, that's the ultra-millionaire threshold, if I have that correct. So, you know, the Democratic Party is not a monolith. There are a spectrum of plans here. As you mentioned, there are many candidates who are saying we want to make college more affordable. What are some examples of the ways that they want to do that? Make public institutions free, that sort of thing?
Yeah, there sure is a spectrum. And it's pretty surprising how much it's evolved over the past few years. Sanders was at the forefront of this issue, and Warren has been working with it too, back in the 2015 before the 2016 presidential election when Sanders was a candidate. Since then, you've seen a lot more candidates embrace debt and tuition-free college, especially for lower-income families. You see candidates talking about income-driven repayment. These are more moderate, more incremental solutions to figure out the student debt problem. Programs like public service loan forgiveness. These are different ways for the government to help people pay off their loans in a more reasonable time frame. But people like Sanders or Warren would argue they don't go far enough. That's the main difference.
And I'm hearing that Joe Biden, one of the frontrunners, the frontrunner going into the debates Wednesday and Thursday, is one of the candidates that's kind of said the least about how he would address college debt and affordability for school. Is there anything that we know about Biden's position, about whether he is supportive of a plan that might be less extreme than what Bernie Sanders is putting forward, but still forgiving some debt? Any indication on Biden's position?
Right. Like many of his peers in the candidate field, he has said that he would support a plan to make 4 years of college free. These were comments where he said we need to commit to 16 years of free public education. Now, other critics have also pointed out that well back in the early 2000s, he also resisted some things that would have made discharging private student loans easier. So on the student loan issue, he has that record just by virtue of being in office longer. But yeah, you're right. His plans are so far a bit hazier.
Stephen Johnson is a staff reporter at the Chronicle of Higher Education. He's joining us to talk about the 2020 Democratic plans that have been put on the table to address affordability for college and student loan debt. I want to bring in my other guests now. Jason Delisle is on the phone. He's a resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, which is a think tank in Washington, D.C., and he specializes in higher education financing with an emphasis on student loan programs. Also on the line is Ben Miller, Senior Director for Postsecondary Education at the Center for American Progress Action Fund, a policy institute and advocacy organization. Jason, I'll ask you first. Obviously, you're looking at Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren sort of pushing their party a little bit further to the left in terms of proposing college loan forgiveness as well as free college. What is your take on the way they plan to pay for this and its impact on folks who live and are suffering under student loan debt?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure the sort of evidence strong evidence that there's sort of widespread suffering with student debt. There are many people who can afford the loans. There are many people for whom the loans were a great investment in their higher education that led to higher earnings, and now they can pay off their loans. A lot of this debt, 40 to 50% of it, financed graduate and professional degrees, so master's degrees, doctors, lawyers. I'm pretty skeptical, especially when you look at the numbers, that all the people with student debt today are unable to afford it. Now, some people have problems and have difficulties, and I certainly think that's an area worth looking at. But this sort of wholesale cancellation of all student debt to me seems pretty excessive, more than is necessary.
And I'm talking with Jason Delisle with the American Enterprise Institute. Just really quickly, want to throw out that number for folks who have dealt with student loan debt. How has it impacted your life? I'm hearing from Jason that he thinks that maybe that problem is a little overblown and that it is not widespread suffering under college debt that we may have been led to believe. 866-893-5722 is the number to call with your story about how student loan debt has impacted your life. 866-893-5722. Again, it's Libby Denkman in for Larry Mantle today, talking about 2020 Democrats, their plans for college debt, and how to either forgive or make college more affordable. Ben Miller with me from the Center for American Progress. What's your reaction to what Jason had to say in terms of maybe this problem is overblown?
I mean, I think the important thing to recognize is when you're talking about something that affects 44 to 45 million people, you can have a range of experiences. And sure, there's going to be some subset of that that's doing fine. And the question becomes, how much work do we want to go through to sort of sort through every single person who's doing fine in order to ensure that we don't possibly ever forgive a dollar we shouldn't? Because, you know, I think one of the things we've seen so far is about 10 years ago, we created plans designed to help student loan borrowers by tying how much they pay each month to their income. And in theory, that should be sort of a big help to them. It solves their monthly payment problem. But what we're seeing is that it hasn't really budged default rates at all, because people who don't owe much money kind of don't really benefit from those plans. They don't use them. We've heard all kinds of nightmare stories about the paperwork involved is very complicated. People don't really understand it. Communicating them is very hard. And I think what we've seen is when you sort of design an entire system focused on just ensuring we don't have any false positives, that we don't forgive any loans for people who aren't, quote unquote, deserving, that you end up with sort of a system that's way too complicated and ends up meaning that the people who get the benefits may be not the ones that we most are worried about or most concerned about. And so I think there's a strong argument for something that is just much more clearly communicated, much more clearly administered. And I think that it has to include sort of immediate cancellation of at least some debt.
Because so a blanket proposal like what Bernie is putting forward is what you're saying is more, it's easier to institute, easier to understand.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't necessarily need to go to forgiving every single student loan dollar, but it has a lot of simplicity involved that's better than what we have now, which is tied to your income. It's for up to 20 years. You have to recertify the paperwork every year. All of that we've just seen is a real nightmare for people in terms of choice and things like that. And in particular, what we're seeing is, you know, we've had these plans for 10 years. We still have a million people defaulting on a student loan each year. And in general, what we're really seeing there in particular is that those are some of the lowest income people who go to college. And it's pretty clear that the solutions we have for them today really are not reaching them.
Yeah, we have some calls on the line that I want to get to after just a quick news break here. We're talking with Stephen Johnson from the Chronicle of Higher Education. Ben Miller is the voice you just heard, Senior Director for Postsecondary Education at the Center for American Progress. And Jason Delisle, Resident Fellow at American Enterprise Institute. We are going to come back with your calls on how student loan debt has impacted you, and also continue to compare and contrast the 2020 candidates' plans for forgiving debt or making college more affordable. I'm Libby Denkman in for Larry Mantle today, back after this news break with Hedy Lynn Hurdies. Hey there. Thanks for listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Libby Denkman in for Larry Mantle today. We're taking your calls on student loan debt. What has it done to your life? What is your experience with taking out student loans? 866-893-5722 is the number to call. We're also discussing the 2020 candidates' plans to forgive student loan debt, as Bernie Sanders proposed yesterday, possibly to make college more affordable as the rest of the field is more in line with. We have guests on the line from the Center for American Progress, Ben Miller, and from the American Enterprise Institute, Jason Delisle. Really quickly, before we go back to our guests, I want to discuss some of our listeners' experiences. Ashika is on the line. Ashika in Hollywood, thank you so much for calling AirTalk. And what have you experienced with student loans?
I graduated in 2009 and I'm 32 years old now. My student loan payments every month are the equivalent of a mortgage payment under income-based repayment. So I kind of did everything the way that I was supposed to do it, kept up with my student loan payments, and continued to increase that payment as I earned more money. But now that I'm like approaching an age that I would be a homeowner and thinking to myself, well, how will I actually get from a rented property into an owned home? It's crazy to believe and to see on paper that for the next 10 years of my life, I will pay about $2,000 a month in student loan payments in addition to paying rent or a mortgage. And it just doesn't, I can't seem to understand how I will ever wrap my arms around, the ability to do all of this. So I'm hugely in favor of the discussion around of relieving student loan debt, even if it's a portion of it. That's helpful to people who are struggling with it, especially young people that are dealing with an uncertain economy. And we are entering the workforce with kind of an expectation to work 2 to 3 times as hard as previous generations, given that technology makes it easier to work more efficiently. So there are a lot of other factors that impact this.
And Ashika, just a quick question. You took these loans out for undergraduate. Can you talk to me about how they have impacted your life? Like, how have you interacted with the economy differently than if you had no student loans?
Sure. So I took a portion of my loans out for undergraduate and then a portion out for graduate school as well. And it's important because when you come into a profession nowadays with a graduate degree, you are able to sort of get to certain positions without having the number of years of experience under your belt.
Sure.
Made up for it in sort of the classroom, and you can operate kind of at a higher level. And the way that it's sort of prompted me to interact with the economy is I also move around a lot for work. And so as a result, constantly can being in different markets, looking at the price of living, but really it's the cost of living that has been affected the most out of everything else, because where you want to live in a safe neighborhood, in an accessible neighborhood, is something that you have to weigh when you think about this $1,000, $2,000 monthly payment that you're making on a loan that really has to be factored into your income.
Yeah. And in terms of potentially purchasing a home or making large purchases in your life, I'm assuming that that's impacted quite a bit by your loan burden.
Oh, absolutely. And, you're paying your loans after taxes. So it truly is. I mean, I pay rent at the first of the month and I pay my student loans at the 15th of the month. And it is like running two houses. And it's, like I said, just I cannot see the forest through the trees and have no idea when it's going to be over. And also when you call these student loan companies and you try to get a sense of, okay, when will my last payment be? They're telling you about, the compound interest on the amount that you borrowed, and you can't even kind of figure out a way for yourself to get ahead, even if you are completely educated. I believe that as someone who can pay student loans, I should be required to pay a higher amount on what I owe because I'm in a position to be able to do so. That's totally fine and fair. But if someone like me can't see their way through the problem, I think we have a really big issue. So I'm hugely, hugely in support of us discussing this.
Briefly, Ashika, do you mind sharing what field you work in?
I work in consulting, in management consulting.
Ashika, thank you so much for sharing your story and your struggle that you're facing as a 32-year-old, highly educated professional with good employment and good prospects, but still really suffering under student loan burden. Thanks again for calling from Hollywood. I want to go to Ben Miller with the Center for American Progress. Do you see any of these plans that the 2020 Democrats are putting forward helping with a person like Ashika? Obviously, Bernie Sanders is going to forgive everything, so that would be a big help.
Sure. I mean, the Warren plan discusses giving forgiveness of up to $50,000, depending upon where your income falls. So not knowing exactly where her income is, as long as she is below $250,000, she would get some degree of relief there. And I think that, that's what you're hearing, is that the timeline on these income-based plans feels very long. I mean, most people probably are in the workforce for, say, roughly 40 years. When you're looking at 20-year forgiveness, that's about half the time you're in the workforce. And, that can be the situation where you're just finishing off your loans at the same time you might be sending your own children to college. And I think that is a big concern. The Castro plan, probably not as much, because that tends to be targeted more at folks who are already getting some sort of federal needs-based benefit, but that it does also anticipate some tweaks to income-based repayment to basically give you a larger exemption for how much of your income you have to put toward it at first.
We're seeing so many reports that the public service loan forgiveness program is just a total mess. I mean, you mentioned it a little bit beforehand, but it seems like every candidate, you know, has to agree that there has to be a big change to the way folks can benefit from that program. It just seems really out of reach for a lot of people and overly complicated.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is everyone tends to focus just on the part about qualifying employment, but there's actually several different gating criteria you have to meet. You have to have qualifying loans, qualifying payment plan, be making qualifying payments on the qualifying loans, on the qualifying payment plan while working for a qualified employer. And pretty quickly, you need to basically be an expert in student loans in order to even figure out how to navigate the program. And I think that's actually a good example of why the hyper-targeted approaches have not been super effective here. Even though public service loan forgiveness is not as sort of income targeted as other things, it just shows that the burden of ensuring we get it as right as possible makes the whole thing just a complicated mess.
Mm. Brian in Encino is on the line. He's sharing his experience, different from Ashika's, who's we heard just a few minutes ago. Brian in Encino, what's your experience with taking out student loans and how they impacted your life?
I took out student loans both for undergraduate and graduate and my law degree, and they were a great investment and have more than paid for themselves. I'm glad they were there. I would do it again.
And Brian, do you mind my asking, at the time that you were going to college, you know, was this in recent years that you were going to school, or was this,
I finished my law degree 25 years ago, and I finished my bachelor's degree probably 35 or 40 years ago.
Yeah. And Brian, I'm just curious, was there any, struggle at the time, or was it a pretty simple process when you were looking at repaying those loans? They were public loans, I assume?
Mainly. Of course it's a struggle, but that's an investment you make in yourself. I have great sympathy for these kids who are ripped off by these for-profit colleges, but people who borrow money to go to school and then get a graduate degree and then complain that their payments are too high, I have less sympathy for that. And The people in the public benefits who work for the city of L.A. or something and get some kind of benefit for being in public service, those people are not underpaid.
Okay, Brian, thank you very much for your call from Encino. I really appreciate it. I want to go to my guest, Jason Delisle, with the American Enterprise Institute. Jason, when we're talking about the likelihood of any of these plans passing that Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, all of these candidates are putting forward, obviously this is a long way off, if these would become viable in their current form. But which plans do you see out there that could reach bipartisan consensus? Are there any ideas about reforming the way we fund public education or the way that people deal with loans that might have a chance with a Republican-controlled Senate, a White House, and a Democratic House?
Yeah, I did just want to jump in, though, on the first caller.
Absolutely, yeah.
That her loan payment was $2,000 a month under the federal income-based repayment program. And so I think it's really important here when we hear about people's student debt levels that we also understand their incomes. So if I run this in my calculator, which I've just done because I know the terms of this program, Ashika has an annual income over $200,000.
She's a business consultant, so gosh, she must be doing quite well.
Exactly, right? She never told us that. And she has a master's degree. She went to graduate school. So she's paying $2,000 a month under the income-based repayment program. That's an income that places her among the highest earning households in this country. I'm really skeptical that she is struggling in the way that she describes and in the way that your average American household would really sort of sympathize with.
And I think you're getting at a major criticism, especially of the Sanders plan, looking at forgiving all debt, including graduate student loans, including loans where people have dropped out of school, really looking at maybe benefiting people that are in the top percentile of income, the top education brackets, not necessarily benefiting working class families, working class people. And I hear that you're skeptical that it's a problem in general. I guess I'm just, you know, trying to push the conversation forward by asking, are there any conversations about looking at college affordability, looking at debt repayment options that, you know, will address some of the, I think, valid concerns that are out there, especially the millennial generation and younger have with college?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the issues that I think is a real one that I think is worth addressing is, the system we have has so many bells and whistles on it in this federal student loan program that there's a lot of confusion, and it's unnecessary, and you know, people graduate with, you know, five or six different loans. They all have different interest rates. There are multiple different ways to repay them. They're difficult to keep track of. You heard the first caller talk about trying to understand what her current debt situation is, and was struggling with that. And that's a part of her story I buy. It's complicated, but it's complicated because of the way Congress has designed the program, just layering on benefits. And I think that, you know, if you look at, like, for example, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's complaint database, it's full of complaints, really, that are getting at the complexity of this program. And so I think that's an area where, you know, you could see some bipartisan agreement on how to make this thing make more sense to the people who are using it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We're going to have more with our guests talking about college affordability, about the student loan debt burden on people in America right now. Taking your calls as well on Air Talk, 866-893-5722. I'm Libby Denkman in for Larry Mantle. Back with more after a short break. Back with more Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Libby in for Larry today. Ben Miller joins me from the Center for American Progress, as well as Jason Delisle with the American Enterprise Institute. And we're taking your calls on student loan debt and what that has meant in your life. Ben, I wanted to kind of bring up that issue that Jason kind of touched on, which is that Bernie Sanders' plan, a blanket forgiveness for all student loan debt. You know, we're looking at people who have taken out major loans for law school, medical school, folks who maybe don't need the assistance. Jordan Weissman with Slate said it was an odd thing for liberals to prioritize because it will mostly help wealthier people. Do you think that Sanders' plan will fall victim to those criticisms?
Well, certainly people are complaining about that. I mean, I think part of the challenge in thinking about is this well-targeted or not is a little bit of what your baseline is. So, you know, the Sanders plan proposes to pay for it through taxes on Wall Street transactions. And, you know, surely there are some people on Wall Street with some student loan debt who get a benefit from that. But in general, something that's going to take money from Wall Street and put it towards student loan borrowers is going to be better targeted than keeping that money in Wall Street. Now, if you were to flip the question and say, you know, if you had $1.6 trillion and we're going to spend it on anything with a domestic priority, you could certainly come up with things that would be further targeted down the line. But I haven't seen as many of the people sort of criticizing the plan on that regard, trying to get into, like, don't spend the money there, but spend it somewhere else.
Is there any conversation about a greater level of oversight that when we talk about the federal government being involved in issuing student loans, that those loans are going for, you know, education that is worthwhile is the word that I'm grasping at here, maybe, that it's not going to fund, you know, for-profit college that turns out to be a junk degree or degrees that are very expensive but don't give you a job prospect that can actually dig you out of that debt. Ben, is there any conversation about the role of the federal government in issuing those loans?
So there's only been a little bit. I mean, there's a discussion within the Warren plan of saying that private for-profit colleges would not be able to participate. Somewhat ironically, this week, any day this week, potentially, the Department of Education under Betsy DeVos is going to rescind an Obama-era rule that was designed to curtail programs at private for-profit colleges and some elsewhere that have too much debt compared to the earnings of actual graduates. And so that's going to take a pretty important tool off the table for reining this stuff in. But, you know, I think the thing that is not discussed as much in these plans is sort of what do we do about expensive private colleges and expensive graduate schools going forward. And I do think that's an area where, you know, you could come up with a fairly straightforward set of answers about judging programs based upon earnings and debt levels and things like that to kind of keep the debt down there. Because, you know, we do see that there are egregious problems in the private for-profit area in terms of things that are just complete ripoffs. And then in the private nonprofit area, we have things that they may not be fraudulent, but they're certainly overpriced. You know, USC has a master's degree in social work that costs $100,000. And there's just no world in which that's going to provide people a meaningful return. But I think that's kind of the next frontier for covering some of the unintended consequences when you talk about forgiveness.
Is there an indication that the idea that at least a community college or a four-year public education at a public university should be free, according to the American people? Is that an idea that people are getting on board with? I think debt forgiveness is a much more complicated question when it comes to people's feelings about fairness, about who has paid their loans and who hasn't. But going forward in the future, is there a consensus on whether there should be more public free education options, Ben?
So there's definitely much stronger support for some concept of free community college. That one probably tends to have the highest general polling support. But the challenge with a lot of this is just how you write the poll question can really affect the results you have, because the word free sometimes tends to trip people up, whereas debt-free, if people understand what that concept means, might be a little bit more popular, because that notion basically is saying you should be able to pay whatever you can reasonably afford rather than just getting no tuition. So I do think that in general, college pricing is a thing that a lot of families really worry about. It's a pocketbook issue. You know, for a lot of families, it's the second most expensive purchase they'll make behind a house. And so I think there is a very strong desire for some solution here. I don't know that that needs to go all the way to free, but certainly something that is clearly communicable is really important.
Yeah, that's Ben Miller, Senior Director for Postsecondary Education at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We also spoke with Jason Delisle, Resident Fellow at the American Enterprise Institute in Washington, D.C., and Stephen Johnson joined us earlier with the Chronicle of Higher Education. Thanks to all my guests this hour who hashed out proposals on the table from 2020 Democrats on college affordability, debt forgiveness, and for callers who shared their stories of dealing with college debt. I'm Libby Denkman in for Larry Mantle. Coming up, some major Supreme Court decisions still to come this week. We'll have more coming up on Air Talk.